chug, 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 chug.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff Podcast. I'm your host, Blake.
And I'm Guy.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We do drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when playing children's card games. Tonight, Guy, we are talking about the first set to come out in 2021, Kaldheim. Woo-hoo.
Blake, I think you mean motherfucking Kaldheim. This is Magic's most metal set ever.
Hardcore.
Oh yeah. If you want, you can totally cut this part out, but I've been practicing like a metal screamo like way to pronounce Kaldheim, and I'm gonna do it for you real quick.
Go for it.
Kaldheim.
That was pretty good. That's better than what I could probably do. I like it. Alright, so this is our Kaldheim set review. We're going to be doing this in two parts. Part one is going to be some background on the set and talking about all the new commanders. And then in part two, we're going to be talking about all of the main deck cards, all the cards that will be going into like the actual deck itself. But before we dive right into it, Guy, what are we drinking tonight?
Well, Blake, I'm drinking Scorpion Bowl IPA by the brand Stone. And the bottle is very interesting because I don't know if it was an intentional thing, but the label's upside down. But I did get this because I was looking for something that fit into the kind of like metal theme that WotC's kind of done for this set. So it has like a devil on it, and I then did notice it also has like some cute little flowers. It's kind of, I mean, it looks metal because it's also, I mean, it's cool. It tastes fine. I'll probably have to keep a can just because I don't know if like all them being printed upside down was intentional or like what's going on here.
Okay, and it's not like the branding is like upside down IPA stout or something. It's not like a marketing gimmick.
I have no idea.
Okay, so it's like obviously a misprint, and it's obviously either worth nothing or thousands and thousands of dollars.
Like all my cards.
Oh, that's so true.
What are you drinking?
Well, now that I'm actually looking at the can, it's a bit strange because the brewery is called Iron Horse Brewery, and like, alright, that sounds pretty metal, but then as I'm looking at this, that's like the name of the brewery. But the actual drink is called Cozy Sweater Vanilla Milk Stout, which sounds very juxtaposed and not very metal at all. Whoops.
Yeah, you didn't have to mention that part, Blake.
I mean, I'm halfway
there. We thought
there.
You were hardcore, but you're not hardcore. No.
I wish. All right. I try, but I fail. It's all right. We are going to now talk about Kaldheim. So just to make sure all of you listening, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, so we're going to give a bit of a quick background. What is Kaldheim? It is a set that is top-down, Norse mythology-inspired set, Magic's take on what a world inspired by Vikings might look like. This set contains 285 regular cards, and then it also throws in the occasional like borderless card, or extended art card, or these like cool-looking Viking showcase cards that look like they're like carved stone, carved wooden structures. They do look pretty cool, and if you're listening to us on our YouTube, we will be showing some of these cards on the YouTube video.
Yeah, what's interesting, I listened to Mark Rosewater's podcast, the first part about Kaldheim, and this has always been on their radar to do, even before I think the Greek mythology set, Theros. But they've always just kind of like put it off and put it off. And one day they were just like, you know, we keep putting this off. But like, why don't we just do it now? And they were like, all right. And so they officially put it on the calendar. So yeah, it follows the same idea of what they've done with like the Egyptian set and what they did with Theros, where you take inspiration from those kind of cultures and you're trying to make it your own thing.
Yeah, I'm also kind of surprised that they waited this long, that yeah, I guess it's just one of those things where, like, we know exactly what we want to do with this set. We're just going to keep it in our back pocket and use it for, like, or, like, whenever we really need to. So, makes sense. There's also a little bit of story to Kaldheim. I'm not going to get into it all, but I'm just going to give you all the basic gist. So, in terms of story, it takes place on this Viking plane called Kaldheim. It's a world of many realms connected by, like, the World Tree, which is, like, this interdimensional tree that branches into all these different realms. So it's like magic has multiverses, and then this specific plane has all these realms. So it's like multiverses within multiverses, and it's weird.
The interesting thing to note is that while everyone is connected on this plane by the different realms, only the gods can walk between the different realms. So everyone knows that there are other realms, but it's the gods who kind of like are able to go from one realm to another.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. Another key part about the story is that Vorinclex just somehow showed up on Kaldheim. It's not really clear how yet. There are no other Phyrexians, just Vorinclex there. And then a mysterious bounty has been placed on Vorinclex's head. So Kaya just like bippity-boppity-booped went over there and has decided to hunt him. And then during her journey, she meets a bunch of other planeswalkers, one of which is Tybalt. Tybalt's also there, I guess. And he's kind of like the main bad guy of this set, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he is impersonating a god, Valky, who we'll talk about in a little bit. And we're not still 100% sure on the whole what is he doing thing, but hopefully we'll get more clarification on that in the coming weeks as the story comes out more.
Sure thing. All right, so I'm not really sure where else to say this in our set review, so I'm just going to say this here. A bit of a warning to our audience to just be kind of beware of like far-right white supremacist remarks you might see online, because white supremacists try to use Viking symbols and false history to advance their objectively wrong worldview, and you might hear stuff like Kaya and Nico shouldn't be on this set because they're not white, and that's just one example, and that's a huge fucking red flag.
Yeah, I remember seeing a year back so on a post for Morrow's blog where someone was like, when you do the Viking set eventually, just, you know, please make it historically accurate. I don't want a bunch of black dudes showing up because then it makes it less believable to me. And that's actually how someone called it out, which, first off, shut up. That's extremely rude and racist. But I think Morrow had a great response where he said something along the lines of, like, we don't make these sets to be historically accurate, but they are meant to be based off these different cultures, but with the magic spin on it. So when we can, we like to include diversity in our worlds. And I know that that's been a big issue of WotC these last few years, where, you know, they've been called out for being pretty whitewashed, at least in-house. But I think, you know, having Kaya and being a black woman on the set and introducing their, like, first official non-binary character, Nico, that's a great place. This is a great time and place for them to have done that.
I agree. All right, so now we're going to move along with our set review. Also, we got to talk about the mechanics just really quick. Promise that we're going to get to the commanders. Promise you guys. But there are four main mechanics that are integral to this set. There's the return of modal double-faced cards. Most of them are going to be seen in these new gods and the pathway lands. There's also the return of changeling. There's a new mechanic called Foretell. So, like, during your turn, you may pay two and exile a card with Foretell from your hand face down. And then you may cast it on a later turn for its Foretell cost. And each card with Foretell has a Raven watermark, so it's quickly identifiable. Then the last mechanic, and a new mechanic, is Boast. Boast adds a drawback to an activated ability, which is referred to as the Boast ability. The drawback is a player can only activate the Boast ability after the creature with the ability attacks, and at most once each turn. And this will make more sense when we actually read off some of these cards. Just kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into the mechanics right now, just because none of the commanders really deal with them. Like, here and there, but they'll be more relevant in the 99, and I can give my thoughts on them there. But just for your reference, what those are, in case that does come up.
Right. And so now, we're going to move into the new commanders. I believe there are 35 of them, but one final note, there are some modal double-faced legendary creatures that do work as commanders. So, some people have been confused about this. So, commanderness is a non-copyable property of the card itself. And if a modal double-faced card is a legendary creature on one face, it can be your commander. You can then cast either side from the command zone, and commander tax applies to the card itself, not which face you cast it. So it's not like, oh, this one side died, now I can cast the other one without doing the commander tax. Can't do that. The commander tax is applied to both faces, basically. And we'll give an example here. Let's start off. We have white commanders here. We have Halvar, God of Battle. 2 white-white, legendary creature god, 4/4. Creatures you control that are enchanted or equipped have double strike. At the beginning of each combat, you may attach target aura or equipment attached to a creature you control to target creature you control. And then on the backside, it is Sword of the Realms, 1 and a white, legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has vigilance. Whenever equipped creature dies, return it to its owner's hand and equip for 1 and a white. So it's something we've never seen before. On one side, we have this legendary creature god, and then on the other side, it's this sword, equipment sword. It's really weird.
It's definitely something that they're experimenting with here, where they're, you know, with each set and how they do the gods, they're trying to give them a unique twist. So here, it's mainly the god and then an equipment or artifact that relates to the god in most scenarios. But so, to kind of go off what Blake was saying, so let's say you cast Halvar for the first time and then Halvar dies. The next time, if you then wanted to cast the sword would cost 2 more, because you've already cast one side once.
Exactly. So, one of the talking points that I might as well talk about this now is people have been pointing out the fact that this is a god, but this god does not have any sort of protection. It doesn't have indestructible, it doesn't return itself like third from the top like a lot of the other gods do from other sets. And a lot of people found this very interested, myself included, and I don't know if that's because the gods with protection cause problems in other formats, or they don't have protection because Norse gods are known to be mortal. I'm not sure.
I think it's probably a mix of both, where they're not trying to create problems for the standard environment, but they're also trying to stay closer to Norse mythology, where you could kill a god.
Alright, fair enough.
Yeah, but I'd say I'm pretty impressed with this card as a commander. The front side is definitely a powerful mono-white card that cares about combat, which is typical. And the ability to swap equipments or auras is also pretty nice, because in a way you're kind of cheating mana costs. And other than abilities like this, there's no way to like switch between like the auras.
Right. I feel like within the last year, or even just the last like 6 months, we're starting to get a real critical mass of card effects that just cheat equipment costs. And I really like that. I really love that.
Yeah, I guess if that's one thing that white has going for it that none of the other colors do, is it's that. That's its way of kind of being able to get around not having as much mana available, is being able to, you know, swap equipment for no cost at all. And, you know, you got your front side pretty good. And then the back side, though, is also really nice, because it's a low CMC artifact and has a low equipment cost. So almost the same turn that you'd be casting Halvar, you could then cast the sword and then equip it. So that's pretty good. Bringing back a creature that you care about to your hand after dying is pretty good as well.
Alright, I have a question for you, Guy. And I'd like to ask this question with every Muddle Doubleface commander. I want to ask you, like, which side do you think people will play? Do you think people will play the front side, the creature, or the back side, the sword?
More? Probably the front side. But for this one, at least, I think neither are bad. Like, we'll talk about how some, you know, there's one side that you want to cast probably more often than the other. But on this one, I think either if you're building your deck around the idea of combat, I guess if you are trying to do that mono-white, you'd probably cast the god more on the front side. But I think both are good.
Alright, I agree with you. I think the front side will be played much more.
Okay. Let's go on to Sigrid, God-favored, 1WW legendary creature human warrior. She has Flash. First strike, protection from god creatures. When Sigrid enters the battlefield, exile up to one target attacking or blocking creature until Sigrid leaves the battlefield. And she's a 2/2. Protection from gods will become more relevant now that we're just getting so many gods in this set. And then, you know, we've had like 15 new ones over the last couple years. This is a cute combat trick, but I think she's just more notable in the 99 than as a commander, since being in the command zone and knowing what she can do, it's kind of like not really a combat trick because you can see it coming. So you're probably not going to get as much benefit from using her, you know, having that information available to all your opponents as you would then her just being in the 99.
Right. Honestly, maybe I'm just a bit skeptical, but I don't think that she's going to see much play as the commander or in the 99. This protection effect does feel pretty niche, even though a lot of the god commanders are semi-popular. I just feel like it's a bit too niche.
I don't disagree.
Okay.
Why don't we already move on to our next card?
Ooh, I'm excited about this. It is... God, I'm going to butcher this name and so many other names in this set. Raidane, God of the Worthy, 2WW, legendary creature god, 2/3 with flying and vigilance. Snowlands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. And then, non-creature spells your opponents cast with converted mana cost 4 or greater cost 2 more to cast. Then on the back side is Valkmira, Protector's Shield, 3WW, legendary artifact. If a source an opponent controls would deal damage to you or a permanent you control, prevent one of that damage. Whenever you or another permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter that spell or ability unless its controller pays one. Wow.
I like this a lot. The first ability will become more relevant now because we're seeing Snowlands returning, and they're just going to be a lot more accessible, and the players will want to run them for the flavor of everything. And you know, you can often get that little boost with the extra planar lens. So I wouldn't count out that first part where it's saying like Snowlands your opponent's control enter the battlefield tapped. That will be pretty relevant moving forward from now. Now, the non-creature spells cast with CMC4 or more is an asymmetrical Gaddic Teeg ability, and it's very strong since you will likely have multiple other stacks effects in this deck.
Mm-hmm.
So hosing your opponents like that, pretty nice, slowing them down. I think it's just funny that this is a god, but the normal art very much reminds me of an angel.
Dude, I was thinking the exact same thing. It's got like wings.
But yeah, like for sure. And then the backside is meh, the first part, just preventing one of that damage. Like, that is something that white has done before, but that's not like crazy ability that we've been asking for more of. I like the second part more, where it's making mana tie for whenever something targets you or something you control. It'll probably make you less likely of a target, but not bad. This is another white, mono-white creature that I think would be either good in the 99, which I will probably include her in the 99 for Avacyn. Unsure about Halvar at the moment, but Raidane, yes.
Yeah, I agree. It's like a pretty decent card. Although, I think this exists in a very weird space where both CEDH players and casual players aren't super impressed with this card because, like, most CDH cards dodge that tax effect on the front where, like, it taxes your spells by two. CDH cards mostly completely dodge that, besides for a few special cases like Ad Nauseam or Peer into the Abyss. That end of the format has such a low mana curve for their decks. And then you go to the more casual players who, generally speaking, a large percentage of them don't like stacks effects, which is awkward because arguably that's one of Mono White's strengths, right?
Oh yeah, like, I'm thinking about that now, and it's unfortunate because a lot of White's strengths stem from the things that players dislike, like mass land destruction or stacks effects. So, it's kind of hard.
Yeah, I just feel like this card exists in a very strange place.
I think it'll see play, though.
Oh, I agree.
Which side do you think will be cast more, though, Blake? Because it is a god and it has two sides.
Honestly, I think the front side will be played more. Just the fact that non-creature spells, your opponent's control, being taxed to mana, and, like, they're just... so many spells are like 4 CMC or greater. I think that's probably the most notable line of text on this card.
Yeah, I agree. The front side will also slow down anyone who's trying to like combo off with a lot of cards.
Exactly.
Because each one of those would then cost 2 more.
Yeah.
So, alright. Next, we're going to move on to blue. Inga, Rune Eyes, 3 and a blue, legendary creature, human wizard. When Inga enters the battlefield, scry 3. When Inga dies, draw 3 cards. If 3 or more creatures died this turn. Meh. I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, it's pretty forgettable. Why is it forgettable? It's like pretty mediocre card advantage engine. I say this almost every set review. Like, not every legendary creature is designed for Commander. And that's actually a good thing.
Yep. Who's next?
Alrund, God of the Cosmos, 3 blue-blue, legendary creature, god, so it's one of those gods, and he's a 1-1, which is weird, it's like 5 mana 1-1, it must have a pretty good effect, right? So Alrund gets +1/+1 for each card in your hand, and each foretold card you own in exile. So here's that foretold mechanic coming into play. At the beginning of your end step, choose a card type, then reveal the top 2 cards of your library. Put all cards of the chosen type into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And then on the back side, he transforms into like a bird called Haka. Haka! Whispering Raven, 1 and a blue, 2/3 with flying. And when the Raven deals combat damage to a player, return it to its owner's hand and then scry 2. It's just generic card advantage. That's really all it does.
I mean, we all know the best 1 blue bird is Stormcrow, am I right? I was reading the rules for Kaldheim, like all the rules notes that they release with each set, and this card already got like an Oracle text update.
Wait, it did?
It did, because I don't think it really matters too much, because you would think already that this is how it would work, but it now reads like, put all cards of the chosen type revealed this way into your hand. So it's telling you that only the cards revealed off of his ability, in case if you were revealing other cards. But, you know, that's kind of how I already figured it would work.
Yeah, I'm sure there was like some niche rules situation where someone realized, oh, that's not how we intended this card to work, so they had to rot it. Okay, that's cool, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I do kind of like how this is a recurring theme among some of the gods, is they're returning stuff to its owner's hand, and I think that's a good way of trying to like help circumvent commander tax, and that's probably something that these gods have a benefit to that some of the other gods don't, is if you can get it back to your hand and get around the commander tax like that, it won't cost you as much. So I think that's just important to note as well.
Fair enough.
Alright, so now we got Kazuma, God of the Voyage, 2 and a blue, legendary creature god. Oh god, this has a lot of text. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may exile Kazuma. Kozima. I'm gonna call it Kozima. If you do, it gains whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control. If Kozima is exiled, you may put a voyage counter on it. If you don't, return Kozima to the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it and draw X cards where X is the number of voyage counters on it. Now the backside. The Omen Keel. 1 in a blue legendary artifact vehicle. Whenever a vehicle you control deals combat damage to a player, that player exiles that many cards from the top of their library. You may play lands from among those cards for as long as they remain exiled. Crew 1, and it's a 3-3.
So it's like the front side is like, again, generic card advantage. And then the back side means you can have a vehicle as your commander, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that's the first time that we've ever had the vehicle as the commander.
Beep beep.
Yep. I think this design is pretty slick. And it's interesting that this is a blue card that cares so much about lands.
Right.
Crew 1 is also really good, just because I think a lot of the times the crew cost on vehicles is kind of like their downside.
Mm-hmm.
This is one, though, where I think the Omen Keel would probably be the better card to play. You know, because it's a god. I guess we didn't mention that with Alrond, but he wasn't that impressive to begin with.
Yeah, it's like no one's going to play either side. Just no one's going to play him.
Yeah. But I think this card would actually just be better in general as a 99 card that cares a lot about vehicles. Because the Omen Keel, specifically for the Omen Keel, because the Omen Keel reads, whenever a vehicle you control deals combat damage to a player. So you're more likely to want to have a lot of vehicles that you can get through this. Though Mono Blue can probably have a majority of the vehicles prior to this, I guess, because it is artifact based, so might see some play.
Yeah, I'm not sure we've said it already or not, but Mono Blue doesn't really have a lot of landfall support, so I don't think a lot of people are going to play the front side of this as the commander. There's just like almost no support for it.
Mm-hmm. Alright, what's our last blue card?
We have Orvar, the All Form, 3 and a blue, legendary creature shapeshifter, 3-3, but it's a changeling. Whenever you cast instant or sorcery spell, if it targets one or more other permanents you control, create a token that's a copy of one of those permanents. When a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard this card, create a token that's a copy of target permanent. So, this is basically Mistform Ultimus, but better in almost every single way. In terms of like casting cost, and its stats, and being every single creature type. But it just has even more abilities that make it better. And that kind of makes me sad, to be honest, because besides for those stubborn players who just love their Mistform Ultimus, this is just one of those. This is an example of one of those cards that just comes along and it's like, why would you play this old card when this new card does everything you want, but better?
I think that old card, Mistform Ultimus, got bought out because of this.
Did it?
I think so. I remember seeing a lot of people talk about that and how they were upset that they wouldn't be able to get a copy of it now. I mean, I think this card is fine. I don't know. Generic Mono Blue doesn't seem like the kind of archetype that I would think would care more about, like, the changeling ability, so I don't know. This is, like, okay.
Alright, we can move on to black. And I don't think we've said it, but we're moving in Wooburg order, so white, blue, black, red, green, multicolor, and colorless. That's the order we do our set reviews in, so now we're in black.
Yep. We got Varagoth, Blood Sky Sire, 2 in a black, legendary creature, demon rogue, has Death Touch, and Boast. I believe this is going to be the only commander that we talk about that has Boast, but I don't want to say that with certainty and then be wrong.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Alright, so Boast, 1 in a black, target player searches their library for a card, then shuffles their library and puts that card on top of it. So, just a reminder, but you activate this ability only if this is a creature attacked, and you can only do it once each turn. And Varagoth is a 2-3.
Okay, so you're telling me that this is a repeatable Vampiric Tutor with a few restrictions.
I mean, Vampiric Tutor costs one less, but it's close. Because the boss is one in a black, and Vampiric Tutor is just a black. I think this is okay. I don't know why, but a lot of people were talking about how this is going to be like the new best black CEDH commander. Just because I think of the boast ability and being able to then find your combo pieces much easier. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I feel like boast very purposefully has a lot of restrictions on it that keeps it from being too busted.
Yeah.
The fact that it's like once per turn, the fact that it's like limited to like attacking. It's very clear that Watsi knew like, oh, this could be busted, but like, let's put a few restrictions on it so it's not.
Yeah.
All right. Ooh, okay. Ooh, boy. This next card is a doozy. I'll just read it out. Turgrid, God of Fright. 3 black black. Legendary creature god, 4/5 with menace. Whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token creature or discards a permanent card, you may put that card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control.
Whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent, not just creature.
Oh, did I say creature? Yeah, permanent. So, even better. And then, the backside, Turgrid's Lantern, because this god is carrying a lantern, is 3 and a black for a legendary artifact. Tap, target, player loses 3 life unless they sacrifice a non-mana permanent or discard a card. And then it has an activated ability of 3 and a black, untap the lantern. So, I'm just going to say this. This is one of the best cards of the set, one of the most powerful. It synergizes with wheel effects, discard effects, edict effects, all these effects found in a lot of various commander strategies. You basically make your opponents get rid of all their stuff, and then you just put it right on your board, which is fucking insane. This is a pretty unique effect, and like the closest comparison I think there is probably like If That Betrays, but this card's wild.
Yeah, any Fetchland, Mindstone, Commander Sphere, those kind of cards. You got the Umbras that have Totem Armor. Those will all come back just for you. Other cards like Thoughtseize, Duress, those are going to be like must includes for this kind of card, because then you get to choose what gets discarded, and obviously you're going to want to pick the best thing.
Okay, I just want to say really quickly that, you know, I've seen people play like Duress and Thoughtseize in Commander, and I'm just like, okay, like this isn't like 1v1, I really don't care. But now that Turgrid exists, I am a lot more afraid of those cards.
You're afraid? As in the God of Fright?
Oh my god.
And the one thing, too, that some people are overlooking, but I feel like once a lot of people listen to the set reviews, they'll realize this, but Turgrid's Lantern on the backside is just an easy combo piece to win you the game if you have infinite mana. Because you will tap it, target player loses 3 life, unless they sacrifice a non-land permanent or discard a card. And then you can untap it for 4 mana. So if you have as much mana as you want, you just untap, and you keep doing that up until the point where they're just going to be losing 3 life, because they can't discard any more cards. And that'll just kill your entire board, all your players.
Spot on. I am planning to buy this card.
Oh yeah. Alright, now we got Egon, God of Death. 2 and a black, legendary creature god, has death touch. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile 2 cards from your graveyard. If you can't, sacrifice Egon and draw a card. And the backside, Throne of Death. Black mana, legendary artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, mill a card. 2 and a black, tap, exile a creature card from your graveyard, draw a card. Well, actually, first, to go back to Turgrid for a moment, like, that's how bad Egon actually is. Because I already want to go back and talk about Turgrid for another second. But I think both sides for Turgrid are going to see a lot of play. Just, it doesn't matter. Both sides are really relevant.
Yeah, especially the front.
Alright, back to Egon, because I was just thinking, like,
as the complete opposite. It's trash on both sides.
It is trash on both sides, but I think the if you were going to be playing one side, you would probably play the Throne of Death side more so, just because you care about mill a little, and this would just get you to mill stuff that you can either reanimate or, I don't know. It's only one black mana, so it's not terrible. It, definitely not a commander card. No, sorry, not to be your commander, but I could see this maybe as the 99 for like some casual mill decks.
I don't know. Even then, I feel like that's giving this card too much credit. This card is very clearly designed for other formats. Again, which is fine. It's just know that this card is not relevant to like commander like at all. No.
Yeah.
We'll move on to red, which is much more exciting, I'd say.
Yeah.
This next card was actually one of the very first spoilers for this set. It is Magda, Brazen Outlaw, 1 and a red, legendary creature, Dwarf Berserker, 2/1. Other dwarves you control get +1/+0. Eh, that's alright. But then there's more. Whenever a dwarf you control becomes tapped, create a treasure token. Sacrifice 5 treasures. Search your library for an artifact or dragon card. Put that card onto the battlefield and then shuffle your library. So, people are either going to build this as a dwarf and dragon tribal deck, including Hellkite Tyrant to win, because you just use Hellkite Tyrant to steal a bunch of artifacts on top of all the other ones you're going to be playing, and then you use Hellkite's trigger to win the game. Or they're going to build this as a combo deck with Dockside Extortionist. So you like cast Dockside, get at least 5 treasures, sacrifice them to Magda's ability, put Cloudstone Curio into play, then cast any creature from your hand, bounce Dockside to your hand, recast Dockside, sack 5 treasures to Magda, put Aetherflux Reservoir into play, cast another creature, bounce Dockside, and then you infinitely recast your Dockside and the other creature and just shoot your opponents to death with the Reservoir. It sounds more complicated than it is.
Yeah, I didn't follow any of that, just because I'm drunk, and also, I can definitely see this card seeing play for whatever the reasons Blake just said, but just with the growing amount of treasure support that we're getting, this card will definitely see just more play in general. Especially in red, because it seems like red is kind of the way, or is the color that is caring most about treasures.
Yeah, I feel like she's one of those people like that. Have you ever seen videos of people who crush watermelons with their thighs?
Oh my god.
I feel like yeah. She could be one of those people.
She could be one of those people.
Yeah. She is strong looking. Alright, we should move on.
Alright, next we got Torol, God of Fury, 2 red-red legendary creature god, trample. Whenever a creature or planeswalker an opponent controls is dealt excess non-combat damage, Torolf deals damage equal to that excess to any target other than that permanent. Then you've got Torolf's Hammer on the backside, 1 in a red, legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature has 1 in a red, unattached Torolf's Hammer. It deals 3 damage to any target. Return Torolf's Hammer to its owner's hand. And then equipped creature gets +3/+0 as long as it's legendary, and the equip cost is only 1 in a red.
I think this card is interesting from a design standpoint, because we first had like Super Duper Death Ray in Silver Border, which did like trample on a burn spell. And then we got a Black Border version as Flame Spill. And then we now have this card. Again, in Black Border. So I think it's kind of a design space they're shifting more and more into Black Border, which is really neat, and I think is one of the best ways to make Mass Burn relevant in Commander, is make sure that all the damage that rolls over is hitting something, whether it's creatures or players. And, I mean, the obvious case with this card is, like, casting a Blasphemous Pact type card, where it just deals a lot of damage to every single creature, and then all that huge amount of damage rolls over the player and just kills them. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Cards like Star of Extinction are also pretty good here, because just deals a lot of damage, then deal a lot of damage to the opponent. I like how the hammer works a lot like Razor Boomerang, and that's like one of Park's favorite cards. So, kind of interesting there, because also Razor Boomerang is often referred to as one of the worst Magic cards ever. I think the small CMC and equip cost is pretty good for the equipment side. And I like the ability, again, that it's returning it back to the owner's hand. Just because that's so easy to do, and then you can then have the option of whether or not you want to cast the god again, or you want to cast the hammer, for whatever the cost is, or kind of getting around that commander tax.
So, this hammer side is basically Mjolnir from the Marvel movies.
Well, it's from actual Norse mythology, Blake.
Well, like, you know, you toss the hammer and it returns to you.
Well, yeah, like actual Norse mythology.
Okay, yeah. Do we both agree that the front side is better?
The front side is definitely better, just because it's going to combo with a lot of those cards that we just mentioned. I can feel like both sides will see play, though, just because I think people who really like Norse mythology will want to run the hammer for the hammer specifically, because they just think that's cool.
Alright. This next card I'm going to read real quick. It is Arnie, Broken Brow, 2 and a red, legendary creature, human berserker, 3/3 with haste. And it has boast, where...
Damn it. It has boast, and we said that there's only one commander that has boast.
Oh, we fucked up. Alright, well, it doesn't really matter, because you'll find out why. One, and you may change Arnie's base power to 1 plus the greatest power among other creatures you control until end of turn, but that doesn't really matter. The best line of text on this card is the flavor text, which is, I headbutted a troll and won. And then in the art, he's got a horn literally embedded into his head.
Yeah, the flavor is pretty cool, and the ability very much matches back to that. But as a commander card or a 99,
pretty weak.
Pretty weak, not going to be that relevant. Let's talk about this next card that I get to talk about. Urgi, God of Storytelling, 2 and a red, legendary creature god. Whenever you cast a spell, add red mana. Until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. Ooh. Creatures you control can boast twice during each of your turns rather than once. Then you got the other side. Harnfell, Horn of Bounty. 4 and a red, legendary artifact. Discard a card. Exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn. This card is... my god. It's incredible. So we're... First off... We don't care about the creatures you control can boast twice. That's never going to be relevant. Never. Unless if you're building a boast deck, good for you. But for any spell you're adding red, so Lotus Petal, any of the Moxes, Jeweled Lotus, just to name a few relevant ones, and Mana Crypt, you're going to net mana while then making more mana. And even the mana dorks that cost only one, like Soul Ring, go crazy with this, just because you essentially are casting them for zero. You're getting red mana for every storm trigger, if you care about that. And the backside of just discarding a card, play those cards, you can dig so deep into your library. Oh my god, this card is actually insane. This is definitely going to be almost a staple red card in any mono red deck. Like, I'm just that confident in how strong this card is.
What Guy said, this card is insanely good, and I'm going to be buying a card of this.
Oh yeah. I'm already trying to, like, figure out how am I going to alter this, and I have a few ideas. So, if you know, you follow us on Instagram or Twitter, you'll find out that way. But if you don't, go follow us there, and you'll eventually see this card.
Alright, so we're going to move on to green. And we have Toski, Bearer of Secrets, 3 and a green, legendary creature, Squirrel, 1/1. And then there's a lot of different things. This spell can't be countered, it's indestructible, it has to attack each combat if able,
and whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So, the biggest thing about this card is that it's the first Black Order squirrel in Commander. So, any longtime players may know that squirrels have historically been in Silver Border, and it's always been this contentious topic as to whether or not they should be Black Border or Silver Border. Are they too much of a joke to be in Black Border? So, obviously, we now have a squirrel commander.
I think in Norse mythology, there is a lot that revolves around a actual squirrel, kind of like this is definitely playing off a Norse like mythos that has existed before this, so it was almost like we have to include it, and I think it was perfect because it kind of lines up with those ideas where a lot of players who have wanted to include or make a squirrel deck now can. However, you are a little limited because it's green. And I think squirrels have been in green, white, and black for the most part.
Yeah, definitely green and black. I'm not sure about white, but yeah.
There's a white squirrel in Ikoria.
Oh, okay. In terms of this card specifically, though, it makes sense. Not, like, there are a number of green creatures that can't be countered, so that makes sense. Having to attack each turn with a 1-1 usually sucks ass, like, because it will just die to a blocker, like, almost any blocker. But this card is indestructible, so you don't care, really. And then that last ability is probably the most notable. Only a handful of cards have this ability where like it is this mass card draw engine, and it's like most comparable to Oran Frostfang, which is from like last year, I believe, that draws a bunch of cards based on creatures that are dealing combat damage to a player. So, based on everything I've seen, I've seen a little bit of excitement around this card.
Yeah, I think most of it, though, is just because it is a squirrel.
Yes.
Ooh! I'm glad I get to talk about this card. We have Vornklex, Monstrous Raider, 4 green-green. Legendary creature, Phyrexian Praetor. Trample Haste. If you would put one or more counters on a permanent or player, put twice that many of each of those kinds of counters on that permanent or player instead. If an opponent would put one or more counters on a permanent or player, they put half that many of those kind of counters on that permanent or player rounded down.
So what does that mean?
Well, okay, it's basically another doubling season. And I would just like to say, I said we would see a return to Phyrexia pretty shortly after Zendikar. I said it in our Zendikar review. I'm kind of right here because Vornklex is here. I know we don't know quite how he got onto Kaldheim, but I think this is kind of hinting at we'll see a return to Phyrexia probably next year. But yeah, I don't know if this is worth running in Sewer Friends decks because it's such a high CMC. It is a good second doubling season, though, in case you can't get doubling season. I will say that when you're doing the half part on your opponents, that's kind of like a double-edged sword, because it's great for hosing their planeswalkers, because if they try to plus one, they will get the ability, but they won't get any counters, so they won't uptick, or you can at least slow them down.
Right.
But in strategies that, I guess, would run, like, Infect or any kind of poison counter, if you're only dealing one damage, you're kind of, like, slowing it down for them. So, it's a little bit of a flavor loss there, just because Phyrexians have always cared about the Infect. So, yeah, I mean, it's strong, and it really reminds me of the original Vornklex, which would double something for you and then half something for your opponent.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. I guess I just have a few little tidbits to add on to what you said. This Vornklex is slightly different to Doubling Season in that Vornklex will actually double the plus one or plus two, like the plus abilities of your planeswalkers, whereas Doubling Season doesn't. That's a small little difference.
Oh, yes. Yes. good to mention.
And then there is a version of this card that is written in Phyrexian text, so you can't really read it unless you are like fluent in Phyrexian, which I'm sure there's somebody out there in the world that is.
Whoever wrote it.
It's going to be similar to that Judge promo Elish Norn card that exists.
And the Swamp. Don't forget about the Swamp.
That's true. And then last little fun factoid about this card is the fact that they have added the word like Phyrexian to the subtype. Phyrexian is now a subtype.
Oh yes, that is good to note.
So they have since eroded a whole bunch of cards now to be Phyrexian, and I'm imagining that is because in future sets we're going to get some kind of cards that care about Phyrexians. So, again, what you were speaking to, Guy, it makes me think that we are going to see more Phyrexians in the future.
Yeah, and there will definitely be an errata list released eventually. I don't know if it's been released at the time of recording this, and it might have been released at the time of us releasing this, but there will be cards from the past that do get the Phyrexian subtype as well. It's kind of like when they added nobles to a lot of creatures after Throne of Eldraine.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. That's true. Alright, we'll move on to our next commander, and I'm just going to read it really quick. Korivori, God of Kinship, 2 green-green, legendary creature, God, 2/4. As long as you control 3 or more legendary creatures, Kolvi gets +4/+2 and has vigilance. Then has an activated ability of 1 or green, tap. Look at the top 6 of your library. You may reveal a legendary creature card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. And then on the back side, it is the Ring Heart Crest. 1 and a green, legendary artifact. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Tap, add green, spend this mana only to cast a creature spell of the chosen type of a legendary creature spell. So, this is part of the God cycle. The front side cares about like legendary tribal sort of stuff. And then the back side is a really mediocre mana rock that only works with that tribe. It's incredibly mediocre. It's forgettable.
Yeah, green already has so many ways of ramping that I didn't think a green mana dork is going to be anything too noteworthy. Because it's kind of a Legendary Matters type deck, it might be worth running in like casual Sisay weather like captain decks, but
even then,
yeah, it's like, I don't think this is going to be that relevant. I'm so glad that it kind of like fell upon this way where I get to talk about all the commanders.
I get to read all the commanders, getting all the cool cards.
Well, at the beginning I was like, oh, Blake's getting to talk about all the cool gods, like I want to read cool things, so it's evened out, so shut up. Next we have Finn the Fang Bearer, 1 green, legendary creature, human warrior, death touch. Whenever a creature you control with death touch deals combat damage to a player, that player gets 2 poison counters.
I'm sorry, Guy. Did you just say poison instead of infect?
I did.
Whoa.
A player with 10 or more poison counters loses the game. And it's a 1/3. So I'm glad we're getting a middle ground for poison, because this feels like good support, since it's not nearly as polarizing as being infect, which would deal poison counters equal to the creature's power. And Mark's reasoning for why they're not, you know, including or not giving this infect makes more sense, mainly because this set doesn't care about -1/-1 counters, and it's just not flavorfully kind of a relevant thing. But I do, again, think that this is kind of, you know, noting to we will see a return to infect next year when we go back to Phyrexia.
I bet.
I hope so.
I think it's a lot of little signs are indicating that.
If anything, just more poison counter support.
Alright, so now we move into multicolor commanders, and there's about 17 of them, so we're about halfway through part 1, and we'll just continue to dive right into this. So, we have Seraph, Realm Eater. I probably butchered that. 1, black, green, legendary creature, wolf, 3/3. Whenever a permanent an opponent controls is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on the wolf. At the beginning of your upkeep, if the wolf has one or more +1/+1 counters on it, you may remove all of them. If you do, exile each other non-land permanent with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of counters removed this way. So it's like a really weird, Golgari, repeatable board wipe. It's strange. So like, this really punishes fetch lands or aristocrat decks that want to sacrifice a whole bunch of creatures because that's just going to trigger the wolf and put a whole bunch of counters on him and make him really large and able to nuke the board really easily. So this is just a really strange effect. It's not something we usually see in Golgari, and I don't think it's going to see much play, but it's really interesting to me.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's interesting how they're, you know, experimenting with different... I think this card will probably just be more relevant in other formats. I don't expect to see this as a popular commander. I mean, I guess maybe... maybe he might be... I don't know. Now I'm contradicting myself. I only say he might be a popular commander because green-black having this unique effect will make him more, like, stand out if you're trying to, like, do some interesting things. It's not like he's another deck, lands matter deck.
Oh, I see. It's not like one of those commanders where it's like, oh, we already have, like, three other commanders that do the same thing. Because it has such a unique effect, maybe it will be played more.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Alright. Again, I get to talk about the cool ones.
Oh my god.
Because now we have Valky, God of Lies. 1 in a black, legendary creature, god. When Valky enters the battlefield, each opponent reveals their hand. For each opponent, exile a creature card they revealed this way until Valky leaves the battlefield. Then you have X, choose a creature card exiled with Valky with converted mana cost X. Valky becomes a copy of that card. And then you got the backside. Who is it? Oh, it's Tybalt, Cosmic Imposter. 5 black, red. Which, if we think of the original Tybalt, who only costs red-red, and now we have Tybalt Cosmic Imposter costing 5 black-red, that's crazy. Alright, so as Tybalt enters the battlefield, you get an emblem with, you may play cards exiled with Tybalt Cosmic Imposter, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. So, already interesting, because he enters the battlefield, you get an emblem, which is always something that has been hard, because those are normally ultimates for planeswalkers, and you have to work several turns for them.
Yeah.
But here you just get it. Alright, so you have +2, exile the top card of each player's library. -3, exile target artifact or creature. And then -8, exile all cards from all graveyards, add red, red, red. And he has 5 loyalty when he enters the battlefield. So, what I like most about Tybalt is that his god side is 2 CMC, which means he can come down really early and make your opponents very cautious about what kind of cards they keep in their hand, because they'll just then exile whatever's the best card from there, and you can then make Valky a copy of whatever that card is. So, that's great about his god side. And then, yeah, the ETB with the emblem, very strong, and I think that's kind of why it has to be an ETB, otherwise this card just doesn't work nearly as well, because, you know, the first word on each of his abilities is exile. Mm-hmm. So if you exile something with Tybalt, then you want that emblem to, like, stick around so you can continue to cast those cards. So he doesn't have to be on the field. I think initially I said this was probably going to be the strongest commander of the set, but that was also before we saw Burgi, so... I do think that this is very powerful, though. His backside costing, like, 5 black-red is pretty steep, but, you know, there are other decks, kind of like, I think the comparison I've seen most is, like, the Paco and Halden decks. Like, a combination between them is also a lot of mana, and this is also, you know, you get this out, and then you just kind of try and find a way to, like, combo off and essentially do the minus 8 to create an underworld breach for yourself?
Okay. Yeah, this is a strange card. I honestly like the front side because it makes all of your opponents reveal their hand while you don't have to, so you get information about all of your opponents. And if you are able to get to 7 mana, you would cast the Tybalt side, and all of his activations are like pretty decent. It's just, and then again, like you said, he gets that emblem right away, which is very unusual and cool. I guess I'd be interested to play against this. I think some people may be wondering, with the rules of Commander and the way color Commander identity works, this is a Rakdos Commander. You can't just put this into a mono black deck. You do have to. This is a Rakdos deck, both black and red. And yeah, I think this is pretty cool.
I think of all the commanders that I've seen, this is the one that I would want to make a deck around the most.
Go for it.
It's just the most interesting one to me.
Alright, I will talk about the next commander, which is Kahl, the Forge Master. Red and a white. Legendary creature, dwarf, warrior, 2/2. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, if it was enchanted or equipped, return to its owner's hand. And then, it also has a line of text that says, creature tokens you control that are enchanted or equipped get +1/+1. So, really, the first set of text is much more relevant. I didn't think much about this card at first, but then as I was listening to other podcasts and reading stuff online, it became clear that this commander can, in fact, become a bit of a combo commander, because you can just include him plus any zero CMC creature plus like Skull Clamp equals really good card draw. Then there's also all of the equipment cost reducers throughout the years plus Parkland Ironworks, Ashnod's Altar, Phyrexian Altar for really good synergy. And then there's really obscure cards like Mask of Immolation or Mortar Pod, which can synergize and be used as combo pieces to just do infinite damage to all of your opponents. I think the question is there a critical mass of each of these types of effects to make this a viable Boros combo deck? And I'm not sure that it's quite there, but as the years go on, maybe there is. Like, I think this is a deceiving deck that's actually potentially powerful.
Interesting. I didn't think much about this, but your reasonings definitely are pretty valid. We'll see. It seems like Boros has gotten a lot more attention and more interesting cards over the last, I'd say, year and a half.
Yeah.
And this definitely now kind of falls into that category, so I guess time will tell. Alright. Oh god, I don't know how to say this. Furja. Judge of Valor. 2 white, black, black. Legendary creature, Angel Cleric. Flying Lifelink. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. And she's a 2/4. I think she'll see a lot of play because versatility with black and white angels is beginning to be something that is emerging. Since we just got Lisa, who kind of was the face of that, but now we're getting a lot of black and white angels in this set. And I think, you know, both of these have, between Furja and Lisa, each are going to kind of do their own thing. So it really depends what you're trying to do. But, you know, black and white angels seems to be something that a lot of people care about. So, or think is interesting. So I think this will still see some play as a commander.
I think I'm a bit more skeptical on this card. Like you said, Lisa, Shroud of Dusk, was a lot more clear and direct about her powerful effect, but Furja is just a bit more like generic card advantage, and like, you are in Orzhov, so you can use like white and black reanimation spells for the cards that you do end up putting into your graveyard, but it's just, it feels too mediocre to me. I don't think that there's a lot of interest in this.
Okay, fair enough. We can already move on to the next card.
Ooh, okay, I'm actually really excited about this. Ha, okay, this order is working out great. All right, so we have Asika, God of the Tree. One green green, legendary creature god, it's 1/4 with vigilance. That can tap to add one mana of any color. Other legendary creatures you control have vigilance and have the ability to tap to add one mana of any color. But the backside is the Prismatic Bridge. It costs white, blue, black, red, green, so one of each color. And then it's a legendary enchantment, dude. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature or planeswalker card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library in any random order. So, I love this card because I am a sucker for enchantments, dude. I love the backside of this. I think I've seen a fair amount of interest in other people being interested in the enchantment side of this because it basically just... Like, the front side isn't all that interesting because it's just like mana acceleration, but like the backside as the bridge, it can go into Super Friends decks because it cheats out planeswalkers. It could go into like five color big creature battle cruiser decks, which just a lot of players love. And then you could also do like five color stacks decks, like what I'm interested in doing. I just think this. The Prismatic Bridge side appeals to a whole bunch of players, and I think last I checked, this is like the third most popular commander from this set, according to PDHREC.com. So I don't know. I think it's cool. I like the art. I've been like over the last like few years trying to buy like a bunch of duels and fetches and shocks, and it's like maybe I'll build this.
Okay. I think this is something that I didn't get to mention that I would just like to mention now, but a lot of times you see this conversation pop up where it's like, can any legendary card be my commander? Like, why is it restricted to the legendary creatures?
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the modal double face cards, they're trying to address people who want to do stuff like that. Like, you can now have an enchantment in your command zone.
I'm glad you mentioned that, yeah. It's like an enchantment as your commander.
Yeah, 3 years ago, I would have been like, wait, what? That's crazy. But this is definitely addressing that and kind of giving players that, you know, option. And I think that's nice because it seems like WotC tried to design around that. Maybe intentionally, maybe not, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's been, up until now, there's been a few cards that people are like... Well, flavorfully, it feels like I should be able to have this card as my commander. Like, I can't remember what it's called, but there's like an enchantment that's like sends you of the world. That's not the name of it, but it's like an enchantment. People are like, why can't I have this as my commander? And they just like have a rule zero discussion with the people they're playing with. And like sometimes they can get it to play in a pod, but then people are always like, you know, I want a legitimate way of having an enchantment commander. And this is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah, and I know when Core Set 2021 came out, and a lot of people were like, can I have the Sanctum of All be my commander? And
right,
it seems exactly. Like a lot of people were going to be very open to that idea of like, yeah, we'll allow that. But this is like a legitimate way where you're kind of like circumventing that. Okay. So... Next, we have Koma, Cosmos Serpent. 3 green, green, blue, blue, so it costs 7 total. Legendary creature, Serpent. This spell can't be countered. At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 3/3 blue serpent creature token named Koma's Coil. Sacrifice another serpent, choose one, tap target permanent. Its activated abilities can't be activated this turn. Or, Koma, Cosmos Serpent gains indestructible until end of turn. It's a 6/6.
Mm-hmm.
The art is pretty sick. And it's not the same generic Simic stuff that we keep seeing. I do think this will see a lot of play just because people like it a lot. And I think just the one downside is there isn't a ton of Serpent Tribal that you're really going to care about.
That's what I was going to say too. Yeah.
The nice thing, though, is it's at the beginning of each upkeep, so it works on your opponent's upkeeps, which is nice, because then you'll always have a serpent, whether or not you then sacrifice it for some reason. But that is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Every turn you'll have something to do.
Right. And I think the one thing I'll add on to that is, I didn't realize it at first, but I believe this is the serpent that is seen in a bunch of the marketing for this set. Is like, in, you see a lot of like this mysterious serpent along with Tybalt, and I think this is the serpent.
Most likely. I know that this serpent plays a big part in actual Norse mythology, where it's kind of like the destroyer of worlds or realms. So it might be that like Tybalt's trying to waken this beast to like destroy Kaldheim. I don't know.
I think if you look at the showcase art, it's like more obvious.
Oh, okay. Who's next?
We have Vega, the Watcher. 1, white, blue, legendary creature, bird, spirit. That's a 2/2 with flying. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. So I thought this was kind of interesting in that it is an Azorius commander that, you know, Azorius isn't a very popular commander color identity to build in. And this is just very different than any other Azorius commander we have.
Yeah, I think it'll be good value for some decks like Savine, where it cares a lot about flashback. And I mean, whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, so Foretell plays a big part in that. Yeah, so it's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it does technically combo with Dramatic Scepter stuff. That's the main win condition, I think, which is
probably
not really a thing that's been available to other Azorius commanders. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, next we got Moriite of the Frost, 2, green, blue, blue, legendary snow creature, shapeshifter, changeling. You may have Moriite enter the battlefield as a copy of a permanent you control, except it's legendary and snow in addition to its other types. And if it's a creature, it enters with 2 additional +1/+1 counters on it and has changeling. Personally, I didn't really see that much interest in this for me. I think a lot of players have interest in it, though. Not really sure why, because it doesn't seem like...
Like, we just got Sakashima of 1,000 Faces as, like, the premier commander who wants to copy stuff, right?
Yeah, that... Sakashima is way better. And I know that it's kind of like, oh yeah, we make Sakashima, but it's not like you're making Sakashima to care about being in competition with this, because this will have more relevance in other formats, more likely, where Sakashima only has to care about Commander, Legacy, and Vintage. So these two will never kind of like compete for each other in anywhere but Commander, but yeah, Sakashima is the better option in terms of like copying stuff.
Alright, so the next commander we have is Jorn, God of Winter, 2 and a green, legendary snow creature god, 3/3. Whenever Jorn attacks, untap each snow permanent you control. And the backside is Cauldring, the Rhyme Staff, 1, blue, black, legendary snow artifact. That says tap. You may play target snow permanent card from your graveyard this turn. If you do, it enters the battlefield tapped. So, as a Sultai commander, and it really asks you to play a bunch of snow lands. So, that's kind of awkward, considering a lot of the snow lands are basics and you're in three colors. Which, if you're in three colors, you don't really want to play a bunch of basics. I expect this to be a pretty casual deck for those reasons. However, on the other hand, you're in Sultai, so you can just jam a bunch of Sultai good stuff, and you could use Jorn to break parity on a lot of potential stacks pieces. So in that regard, maybe it's not going to be a casual deck. I'm not so certain. One last thing I have to say about this card is that, you know, in other formats you play Dark Depths, but I don't think the Rhyme Staff is enough of a reason to suddenly make Dark Depths a played card in the Commander format. And before any of you ask, no, We are not renaming the podcast the Rhyme Staff Podcast. That's not going to happen.
Okay. Next, we have Harald, King of Skemfar. 1 black green, legendary creature elf warrior. Menace. This creature can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures. In case you forgot what Menace does. And when he enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal an elf, warrior, or Tyvar card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And it's a 3/2. It's just more support for Golgari elves. I think this is definitely something that you could see in a Golgari elf deck. We did get a lot of support from that in Commander Legends just recently. So, eat your heart out, but not too much that I think will matter for this, just because we also got a Golgari Commander pre-con with this set, and I think that is just more relevant to run as a Golgari Commander, or the ones we just got in Commander Legends.
Exactly, and we'll talk about that upcoming Golgari Elf Commander soon. This is just like generic card advantage in Elf Tribal, and if that's the situation, you always got to ask, like, why not just play Nath of the Guildleaf? So, I think we'll just move on.
Yeah.
Two.
I think one other thing that, sorry, the just to start, because I think we're kind of not talking about these specifically, but we're talking about some uncommon commanders right now, which we don't see a lot of uncommon legendary creatures, but this is definitely something that it seems like they've been exploring more with in the past couple sets, but it seems like in this set specifically, we got quite a few.
Yeah, I didn't notice that at first, but that's totally true. So, in addition, we also have Carter Doomscourge, 2 black red, legendary creature Demon Berserker, 4/3. When it enters the battlefield until your next turn, creatures your opponents control attack each combat if able and attack a player other than you if able. Whenever an attacking creature dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. So it's basically a Chaos Goad-style commander. I think it's slightly different than Goad based on the wording. I think there's slight rules differences, but that's basically what it is. It's like, if you want your opponents to stop, like, playing value creatures and just having them sit there forever, you want to cause chaos, you want, like, people to be smacking each other in the face and getting angry, this is the commander for you.
Very true. Next we have Narfi, Betrayer King, 3 blue-black legendary snow creature zombie wizard. Other snow and zombie creatures you control get +1/+1. Meh. For 3 snow mana, so the symbol is referred to as it can be paid with any 1 mana from a snow source. So in this case, if this were your commander, it would either have to come from a snow-covered island, snow-covered swamp, or a snow artifact that could produce mana. So for 3 of those mana, return Narfi from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. I think just the best part about this is, again, it can get around commander tax for a less cost, because 5 is more than the 3, so you cast this once, and if you let it die, you can then keep casting it from your graveyard. But that's kind of the only relevant part about this. I think what's really cool is the showcase art, which is just metal as fuck.
It is, because it's just like this skeleton who's like looking at like a skull in his hand. He's got a crown and he's just looking very dark and menacing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most generic metal thing that I think you could do, but it works so well. It works so well.
Yeah, kind of backtracking a bit, this is a very meh card. There's just so many better zombie support cards, so many better zombie commanders. Like, you can combo with this card, but it involves, like, 4 or more cards that, some of which are, there's not very many redundancy pieces of it. So, I don't expect this to be played very much. I don't expect to see it very much.
Okay.
Alright, our next commander is Agar, the Freezing Flame, 1 blue-red, legendary creature, giant wizard, 3/3. Whenever a creature or planeswalker an opponent controls is dealt excess damage, If a giant, wizard, or spell you control dealt damage to it this turn, draw a card. So, it's a little bit complicated wording, but basically, if you do a bunch of like mass burn spells, you're going to draw a bunch of cards. I don't think that this is a card that is enough to incentivize you to build giant tribal or wizard tribal. I think it incentivizes you to just build a bunch of like mass burn spell tribal sort of stuff.
I agree. I mean, this set does have a lot of blue giants and a lot of red giants, so if you do want to go that route, that's this guy's probably your best bet.
Sure.
But it definitely won't see anything above casual play. Next we have Maya, Bredegarde Protector, 2 green, white, white, legendary creature, human warrior. Other creatures you control get +1/+1. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 white human warrior token. So essentially landfall, and it's a 2/3.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, tokens are a strategy that are semi-popular. Landfall is actually kind of popular in Commander. But together, I'm not so sure. I don't see much talk about this card. You know, I'm sure somebody out there is going to build this. More power to you. I just don't expect to see it a whole bunch when I go to my local game store.
The only thing that I think is, like, relevant is you got the combination of, like, the tokens and the lands, where now you can run the cards like Doubling Season, which will get you more tokens. And you can also have the cards where it's like when a token enters the battlefield, these are like white cards. Instead of like the token entering the battlefield, instead you create a 4/4 white angel token. So I think it kind of like mixes those two that we've seen over the last couple of years. But neither are... Yeah, I don't think this is going to be something that's like super popular. But if you are, I think that's the best route that you would take. Because, I mean, this also does cost 5 mana.
Yeah, you're totally right. There are totally a lot of, like, each archetype on its own are well supported with many cards that support that archetype. I am, like, so together, there are lots of cards that can go into this deck. I just don't know if there's really that much interest from players.
Yeah. I agree there. Yeah. It just seems like so much setup for, like, an okay ability. So, Yeah, if someone makes this, more power to you, and that's probably how they're going to make it, but otherwise I don't think we'll see much play.
Alright, we're approaching the end here, folks. We have Savella Ice Shaper, 1 red green, legendary snow creature, troll warrior, that's a 2/4. It has an activated ability of 3, tap, create a colorless snow artifact token named Icy Manolith, with tap, add 1 mana of any color. And then it has another activated ability of 6 red green tap. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may cast a spell from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So this makes mana, and this can cheat the casting cost of spells. However, both of which are very, like, nerfed. They were specifically designed where, like, you have to tap it, it's a whole bunch of mana to activate both of the abilities. Like, again, this is one of those commanders where, like, you can combo off, but it takes like 5 or more cards. So it's like, I don't know how many people are actually interested in this card. I do personally like the art, but that's just me.
Yeah, a lot of people have actually said that they like the art, but I'm just like, I don't see it.
I don't know, it's just like the Thinker, you know, the famous sculpture. It's like the Thinker.
I suppose.
I guess.
All right, now we're just going to talk about our last two commanders, which are the two commanders that are in the commander precons that are associated with Kaldheim. This is something that they've been doing a lot more often, and in both of these decks, these pre-constructed decks that you can buy, there are 8 cards that are designed specifically for the deck. The only ones that we are really going to talk about are the legendary creature cards, because the other 7 that were designed for each deck are really only relevant to those decks. They are pretty good just for those decks. So if you want those cards for, like, one of these strategies, just pick up this deck. Alright. So first we have Renar, the Ever Watchful, 2 white blue, legendary creature, spirit warrior, flying vigilance. The first card you foretell each turn costs 0 to foretell. Now, I want to clarify this real quick. To foretell a card is when you pay the 2 mana, not when you cast the card from the foretell zone, to kind of clarify. So, just the first card that you foretell each turn will only cost 0. It won't cost you anything. So that way you can, you know, foretell more cards away. And you can only foretell on your turn. So it's not like Gavi, where you were able to cycle a card every turn for free. You can only foretell a card for free once on your turn. So, the rest of the text reads, whenever you exile one or more cards from your hand and or opponents from the battlefield, create a 1-1 white spirit creature token with flying, and it's with 2-3. So obviously, if you're going to build this, you'd go with the foretell route, so you just want to include as many white, blue foretell cards as you can. Otherwise, it's not that good.
Yeah, my main issue with this card is the fact that I don't think we're going to see foretell as a mechanic being used in future sets. It's very clear that foretell is bound to this set for like design and lore reasons, right?
Right. It's the same thing that they did when they had the mutate commander Otremi. They made a deck specifically around that so you could make a mutate deck because people get excited about the mechanic. But now the only time that we're going to see more mutate cards is if we actually return to Ikoria, or if we have a thing where it's like Modern Horizons, which just brings back a bunch of mechanics that we have previously seen.
That's actually like a perfect example. Yeah, I totally agree. So like, people will get this, but then they'll want to like upgrade it, but then like, there's not going to be really any cards to upgrade it with. So I just feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alright, our last commander is Lathro, Blade of the Elves, 2, black, green, legendary creature, elf, noble. It's a 2-3 with menace. Whenever Lathro deals combat damage to a player, create that many 1-1 green elf warrior creature tokens. Then it has an activated ability of tap, and tap 10 untapped elves you control. Each opponent loses 10 life, and you gain 10 life. So, this commander is a little bit weird. It wants you to go tall and at the same time go wide with creature tokens. So that can be a little bit of a tricky way to build this commander. It definitely can be done. And it is very comparable to Nath the Guildwolf, the other Golgari elf commander, in terms of creating elf creature tokens. So I am very curious as to whether people are going to just take Nath and convert them over to Lathro, or if they are different enough to where they each kind of do their own thing. I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, one thing that I'm going to say about Lathro, I think the one thing that you want to do with Lathro is you just want to give it vigilance as well, because you want to attack, make a lot of elf warriors. And since it has vigilance, it attacks, you create a bunch of them, it's still untapped, then you tap Lathril to then tap untapped elves you control, and then you can kind of get like the best of both worlds and make it a little easier for you to get that to go off. Because it seems a little hard when you are going to attack, and if it, then she's tapped, and you have the 10 elves, it's like, ooh, I don't know if I can then get this to go off.
Right.
So That's just something to keep in mind.
Alright, we made it through all the commanders. Awesome. I want to get your last final thoughts here, Guy. What is, in your opinion, the like best new commander?
So best new commander for me is either Tybalt or Burgi. I think Burgi is exceptionally strong either as the commander or as a 99 piece. Again, I said it, but probably going to be a mono red staple. I think you can make the argument for either of them. And just Tybalt being a 2 mana god or a planeswalker is very, very nutty. It's really easy for you to get that emblem. and you can just then kind of like go off with that, or you can just play defensively because it can just steal cards from your opponents really soon. So those two being the most powerful, and then a lot of these do have potential for just being like the most popular, like Essica, the Prismatic Bridge, Coma. Those definitely seem like they're going to be really popular. Tybalt seems like he's going to be really popular. I think Vorinclex, you know, we do love Vorinclex, but he'll definitely be more of a 99 piece. I think we have a lot of interesting starts for this year.
I will say, I feel like I kind of asked you a really difficult question, because at least from my perception, it's not like there is an individual commander that people are super duper hyped for. It seems like most of these commanders, there's some interest here and there. You know, compared to other sets where like people were really excited about four color Omnath, or people were really excited about Obeka Brute Chronologist, or like Urlok, where each of those commanders have tons and tons of decks. I don't really see that with this set. Everyone seems like mildly interested. So I'll be interested to see in the coming months how we look back on this set.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, especially since this is going to be the one that's out the longest for the year. So at the end of the year, when we do our end of the year review, it'll be interesting to see how did it fare out.
Yeah. So do you have any final thoughts?
Good start, but we do have the 99 that we're going to talk about, so I'll give more of my like final thoughts there.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we are the Wizard Staff Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Make sure to leave a like and a review. It really does help. You can follow us on almost any social media platform like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at WizardStaff101. You can send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you in part two. Peace.
Peace.